go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome, everyone, to the next episode of The Deep Space High, a sci-fi TV podcast where we break down the latest and maybe not so greatest episodes of today's sci-fi TV. I'm Jedi Master Steve.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
Oh, so you finally came up with a name for yourself instead of just being Chris.
I did, actually. Not long before we started recording this, actually. It was a suggestion from my dad, or our dad, I should say. Well, so thank him for that.
I'm glad you finally decided to get some inspiration.
Yes.
So how's it going over there?
Oh, you know, it's going all right. I decided to do a 3-day fast. So I am about halfway through that. And it sure has been fun. I am very exhausted right now. I'm about 44 hours into the fast. And I'm trying to get through of a 72-hour fast.
You're in the middle of a fast, and I just devoured a whole New York style pizza. So, polar opposites for some reason.
Yeah, I know, right?
And I'm having a beer, so.
Oh, good for you. I'm having a cup of tea. Earl Grey, actually.
Oh, nice. Which reminds me, I should probably open said beer.
That would be important.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, at least in your defense, you just finished playing a round of golf, so.
Yeah, that was the drinks well deserved. That was one of the most exhausting rounds I think I've ever played in my life.
Yeah, I'd imagine. Especially how hot it is right now in Texas.
Oh, yeah. Low 90s with humidity out the asshole since we got storms. I mean, it was like playing in swamp ass.
Swamp ass. Man, yeah. I wonder what that would be like.
Well, come down to Texas and play.
Was the course flooded?
No, it wasn't flooded. We just got storms and it was humid as hell. So, you know, you go out and you have to dry off your hands every time you swing the damn club because you're just drenched in sweat.
I was going to say, did you have to play with the Corona bag on this time?
The Corona bag?
Yeah, the Corona bag. No, not the Corona bag. The Crown Royal bag. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Crown Royal. No, I still have a glove. I mean, it's being worn out, but, you know, I've only played with a Crown Royal bag as a glove once out of desperation. And that actually turned out a pretty successful round.
Which was very surprising, given how much you suck. So, well, Steve, are you ready to get started with this episode?
That's a yes.
Well, that's a yes.
You can do it! You can do it all night long!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it.
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it.
I'm gonna go do it.
So, what do we have in store for this week, Steven?
Today, we are watching Season 1, Episode 7 of Star Trek Picard, entitled Nepethine. Nepethine. Yeah, we'll go with Nepethine. What the fuck?
What the fuck?
What the fuck?
What the fuck?
Ah, mate, what the fuck?
Fuck me.
Ah, fuck me right in the crocky.
Hey, that actually wasn't that bad of an Australian accent. Unless you were trying to go for a British accent, then that was horrible.
No, I was going Australian.
Okay, good. That one wasn't bad. You haven't been able to do an Australian accent that much recently. Or that one.
Well, the only thing I could do is, oh, crocky. That fucked me right in the bagpipes. Okay, whatever.
No, that doesn't work. All right, well, let's let's actually get into this. So Steve, guess what I noticed again in this opening scene?
What?
Another flashback.
Oh, yeah.
This whole season, every episode has started with the flashback. I think your theory was right.
No, there's two, I think, that have an episode 1 and episode 6. Or the last episode started with a dream.
Oh, yeah, it did. Well, no, both of those two started with a dream. But would that still be considered a flashback? Since it would be of their childhood and it's of, I guess the first episode, maybe not, but I mean, it was supposed to be a memory of her childhood.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it could constitute as a flashback, but I think we'll just go with it being a dream. So, but 5 of the 7 episodes have started with flashbacks.
Yeah, they have.
But this one wasn't as big as a flashback. It was a it was just a 3-week jump back. This flashback shed some more light on the conversation Dr. Girardi and Commodore O had.
Yes, and we actually find out some pretty important information from that scene, too. We find out that Dr. Girardi is working with the Commodore, that she showed her something. The Commodore showed Dr. Girardi, and that the Commodore is a Vulcan, or at least partially a Vulcan, because as far as I know, Romulans cannot mind meld. They're not telepaths.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was under the impression that she was a Romulan disguised as a Vulcan in the first couple episodes of the season.
Right, especially since, you know, Next Generation's done that before.
Yes, but now we find out that she does have some, you know, she has to have some Romulan blood in order to do a mind meld. But then again, you know, Romulan and Vulcans kind of share a similar ancestry, so it could, you know, it could be... I would find it hard to believe that they're telepaths and have the capability to mind meld, given how many episodes of Star Trek we've had. And it is, and you know, you're the expert, but if you say there has been nothing in those episodes that would give any hint of them having the ability to mind meld, then I'm assuming that they don't, even though they share a common ancestry with Vulcans.
As far as I know, they don't. And an episode that I'm going to cite on why is actually going to be from Star Trek Enterprise. So in Star Trek Enterprise, their Romulans had a weapon to where they used a telepathic, basically an albino Andorian. So it's like a special sect or a little region of the Andorian people that are telepathic to use the device. Now, if they were to be telepathic, wouldn't they have used the device themselves? If they would have any form of telepathy, because only those who can use or who have that telepathy can use the machine. So, you know, in that storyline, Star Trek Enterprise is canon, so it doesn't make sense to me, and I don't ever remember any scene to where Romulans had telepathic abilities.
Well,
so I don't know. That would be a first. So to me, she would have to be somewhat Vulcan.
At least half.
So, yeah, I mean, that's true. She could be half and half.
Commodore O was able to show Dr. Girardi why the Jat Vash is so adamant and why they are pushing and why they hate sins and why it is very important that Girardi goes onto this. And she explains it's very important that she goes onto the ship, joins Picard, because the sins have to be stopped at all costs. Otherwise, trillions could be lost. Is that where that was explained?
I get what you're trying to say. Yes, that this is that moment to where we, you know, she figures out that holy shit, you know, the synths are pretty fucking bad, and if we don't do this, trillions will die.
Yeah,
and we did find that out in this episode. So, I just kind of wanted to keep hearing how that would play out. You know, how much like me you're turning into.
So after this lovely flashback, you kind of get some other storylines. You get a little bit of Rios and, you know, his ship, and Rafi and Girardi are all caught in the tractor beam. They're trying to get to the rendezvous to meet up with Picard, but the Borg ship won't let him go. And you get some back and forth with the Hugh storyline, which we'll call the C storyline. The Hugh and Elnor storyline. And
on the Borg cube.
Yeah. And in essentially that scene, you know, you get some information. She's essentially stalling, and Rizzo is stalling and keeping them in a tractor beam so Narek can get on a ship and essentially follow them. That way they can lead Narek to Picard and he can do whatever the hell he wants. So the scene starts, you know, the episode starts with those three scenes or four scenes and back and forth a little bit before the intro comes in. And next thing you know, cue Picard and Soji.
Yeah, but we learn some important things, or, well, I guess I don't want to say we learned some important things, but, you know, we did have some development to where Narissa, you know, in to buy time, ended up killing the XBs, and which is what Hugh has been working in this entire project on the Borg cube for, to try and regain these drones' sense of individuality, and she just slaughters all of them because Hugh helped Picard and Soji escape.
Yeah, she kills like 5 or 6 of them right there in front of him.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I don't know. I don't think that was all of them, but I mean, still.
No, there's
all the hard work that he was putting into getting these guys, these people's individualities back is now gone.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was that was a little sad to see Hugh in that state and him just discombobulated and heartbroken over, you know, the slaughter of his people.
Yeah, but I mean, that's going to come into play later on in that C storyline. So did you notice, I'm curious, when they went back to Rios' ship, did you notice that they made a specific reference? I think it was Dr. Girardi who made this interesting reference. I'm curious if you picked it up.
I did pick it up.
Master Jedi Steve.
Yes, Master Jedi Steve knows exactly what the fuck you're talking about because he is in tuned with the motherfucking Force.
All right, Mr. In tuned with the motherfucking Force. What was the reference?
It was a Star Wars reference. It was an Empire Strikes Back reference. Specifically, because what's happening on Rios' ship at the time is that they finally got free of the tractor beam. They're off trying to meet Picard, and they find out they're being tracked. And they try, you know, Rios does everything he can to try to shake the tail, but nothing works. And then Girardi's just like, well, why don't we find a comet, fly into it, and, you know, end up landing on a giant creature. I was like, oh! That's so Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, but she said it much better.
Well, you know, she had a script. I'm pulling it from memory, and I've had a few drinks. So
that's fair.
So either way, it was a Star Wars Empire Strikes Back reference, and it gave me a partial for Girardi.
Hey, it's nice to know that in the 25th century, they're still going to be referencing Empire. So that's good to know.
I'm pretty sure she called it a comet, and I'm pretty sure in Star Wars it was an asteroid, but that's just nitpicking.
Well, I mean, if the storyline's going to last 500 years, some details are going to get mixed up.
Yeah, still. Still, Girardi's a fake fan. Unless I'm the fake fan, then someone's going to call my ass out on it.
Yeah, probably.
But
they definitely will.
That reference, it did give me a bit giddy, you know, being the huge Star Trek nerd of the two.
You mean the Star Wars nerd?
Fuck, I have been drinking a little too much.
I know you have. Well,
yes, being the huge Star Wars nerd of the two of us. Yes, I did get a kick out of hearing that reference. So, like I mentioned a few minutes ago, Rios is being tracked, and he's being tracked by Narek. And I feel like the writers took away the suspense that they could have had by playing the flashback too early. Because in that flashback, you know, Commodore O gives Girardi a tracker that she can chew. That way she can be followed. But in my mind, I'm thinking, why wouldn't you play that until later in the episode to build some suspense on how the fuck Narek is able to track him? Is it Rafi? Is it Girardi? Could they have somehow placed a bug through the tractor beam onto their ship? So I just found that a little odd. I feel like that storyline could have been a little more suspenseful if they didn't play the flashback at the beginning of the episode, or at least reveal the detail that she was given a tracker.
Yeah, I mean, that could have been a real missed opportunity for the writers or the directors of the show to build up that suspense to have that reveal. But I don't know if that would actually be as much of a reveal or as much of a suspense, since you already know that she killed, since she killed Dr. Oh, I can't think, what is his name?
Dr. Maddox.
Thank you. Since she killed Dr. Maddox. So I don't think that it would have been built that much suspense, since you probably would have suspected it's her, and that's why she's freaking out so much.
Yeah, and that makes a little sense. I just feel like, you know, because there's a scene later in the episode where Rios isn't suspecting Girardi as being tracked, but as suspecting Rafi. And I feel like the writers had a chance to pull us, you know, kind of speculate who it might be. Yeah, I guess it makes sense. Even though I think most of us probably would have leaned Girardi, since she killed Maddox, she's obviously hiding some stuff. Maybe it was a good call that they played it now that I'm saying it out loud and we're back and forth on it. I mean, at the same time, I feel like it kind of was still a missed opportunity that they could have played the suspense a little bit and maybe stuck it in, you know, in the middle of the episode. You know, I what the fuck is so funny?
I'm just thinking, like, oh, what's his name? Stuck it in the doctor a couple of times, apparently, since he's all over her.
Shit, I'm sitting here like, I'm like balls deep in serious. Oh, why would I go balls deep? Okay,
I don't know.
You brought the sexual reference.
You're really going
on,
into it, and I'm just. I know, but I mean, I'm pretty high, so you know, I just heard the balls deep, and then it just goes.
No, but I'm neck deep in the drama. We'll go hip deep in the drama, and then you come out of left field, run over me with the golf cart, and pull out a Rio sex joke. I mean, it caught me off guard.
That's all right. That's still pretty funny, though. Yeah.
So let's jump into the A storyline with Jean-Luc and Soji.
Yes. We pretty much haven't really touched on it since really all episodes since their escape from the Borg cube.
Yeah, and they jump to Nepethine, or at least, you know, they come on to Nepethine. It's after the introduction, so at least a good 10 minutes of the episode has already gone by. Maybe not 10, 8, but a good chunk of the episode has already gone by before you see your titular character.
Yeah, I mean, and the first thing that they do as soon as they get there is they get held at Arrowpoint? I guess that's what you would call it. Yeah, by a mysterious figure who, as she comes into the light, you see little pine cones on her head for ears.
I didn't notice that.
I noticed that. I'm like, are those pine cones? I'm like, okay, maybe this is a kid.
I didn't notice that.
And it, and then it turns out that it was, and Picard knew who she was from the beginning. All right, so Steve, did you notice that with her name, when Picard said the little girl's name, did you recognize it at all?
Kestra?
Yes.
No.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you why that name's important. That name is important because any Trekkie who watches the show on a regular basis, they know that Kestra is actually Deanna Troi's sister, is the name of her sister who passed away from a tragic accident when Deanna was a baby.
Oh, yeah.
That was a whole episode about Deanna Troi's, you know, that Deanna had with her mother, Loxana. Her mother went into a coma because of it. So as soon as you hear that name Kestra, you know, that's something to do with Deanna Troi. And what planet did they just happen to go to? The planet that had Deanna and Will.
Yeah, no. I mean, I've seen that episode, but I didn't recall it when I was watching it. So I guess that is a nice little tidbit for hardcore Trekkies. They'll kind of know what's going on versus, you know, someone who's more of a casual fan where, you know, it's still
they
kinda,
may not notice,
you know,
it. Yeah.
Yeah. The casual fan won't understand what's going on, or, you know, won't quite catch on.
Yeah, but I just thought that was interesting, and I was curious because I know you've seen it, but I was curious if you were able to notice that or pick that out from the episode.
No, because I binged all of TNG, so some of those episodes run together. Some stick out, some run together, and most of the Waxana episodes run together because those are, you know, some of my least favorite Trek episodes.
You don't like Waxana?
She's kind of annoying.
Well, yeah, but I think she does a great job at being annoying. Like,
yeah, but it's fucking annoying.
That's fair. But I mean, there are some actors to where it's like when they're annoying, you just straight up hate them. And then there are some actors when they're annoying, you appreciate how good they are at doing their job. For me, that was always it for Loxana, who, by the way, most people don't know this. The actress who played Loxana was also in the original series as she played Dr. McCoy's nurse. In the original series, and is also married to Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek, the original series, and The Next Generation.
I'm sure most of the Trekkies will know that.
Yes, but did they also know that Loxana, the actress who played her, was the voice of the computer?
Yes, I really don't think you give them enough credit.
Yeah, you're probably right. All right, what about your casual fans?
No, casual fans aren't going to know that. Casual fans aren't going to have a clue what we're talking about because chances are they don't recall that much of TNG, or, you know, maybe we're catching people who are watching Picard for the first time and never seen Star Trek a day in their life who have absolutely no idea what the fuck you're talking about.
That could be true. But this is a sci-fi podcast, so I'd like to think they at least know something about the show. You know what I mean?
True, true. It's a very niche podcast, so chances are they have seen Star Trek at least one go around, or at least some series or some episodes. So,
and if you haven't, you should go watch it like right now.
Yeah, but skip the Waxana episodes.
I say watch them. They're pretty good, especially in Deep Space Nine. It gets in a weird direction with her in Deep Space Nine, though.
Hmm. Okay. Well,
that's for a conversation for a different time.
Yes. So, you know, for the casual fans, you find out who her parents are. You know, obviously, like Chris mentioned, it's a Will and Deanna Troi. Deanna Troi, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Of course, where would Picard go when he has nowhere else to go?
To the Rikers.
Exactly.
You know, and these scenes are nice. It's nice to see the three of them on screen again, because you haven't seen them together since Nemesis, at least in Trek-related. I don't know if they've been on anything else, but Trek-related, you haven't seen them since Nemesis on screen together. So it was good to see the three of them. You got some nice nostalgic feelings. You know, kind of threw you back to the TNG days and the movie days.
Well, I'm not going to lie. Riker stole my retirement plans.
To cook pizza?
No, just get a little cabin, grow, you know, in the middle of a beautiful, in nature, you know, probably in the woods near near a water source. I think they're near like a river or something. You know, just grow your own gardens, live off the land, make your own pizza, hunt your own food, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of my retirement plan.
But they moved there more than a retirement plan. There's a, you know, you find out in these scenes in this A storyline that they moved there because the soil has a regenerative property. So the food grows, which the food grows better than it does in most places around the universe. And they moved there because they had a son named Thad. They moved there because the son became very sick. So they were hoping that the food that was grown in the regenerative soil would probably help, maybe not cure him, but prolong his life and give them more time with him. But, I mean, you find out that he had some rare neural condition called manadaxic neural sclerosis. I'm not a doctor, and I've been drinking, so I got the manadaxic part right, but and the neuro right, but it's sclerosis.
Yes.
Neurosclerosis.
Which, it's a silicon-based virus, or at least that's how they explained it in the show.
When Thad got sick, we came here to Nepenthe.
What did he have?
Mandaxic neurosclerosis. It's a silicon-based virus. It's very rare, and in theory, completely curable. You just have to culture the infected cells in an active positronic matrix.
And which is actually not the first time that you see a silicon virus or a silicon virus in Star Trek. You see it in Star Trek Enterprise. And the thing with the silicon-based virus is humans are carbon-based organisms. For anybody who does not understand the context.
No.
Yes, I know. Shocking. For in case anybody.
Next breaking news. Humans are made up of 70% water.
That was like. Yeah, okay, that's about right. Ah, good job, Steve. Good for you for knowing that. So the idea of a silicon-based virus is that since humans are carbon-based, our immune system is incapable of fighting a silicon-based virus. So apparently the only cure for this virus was through a positronic matrix, which I don't quite understand why flushing it through a positronic matrix would, you know, eliminate the silicon-based virus. But since the Sin Man happened, there was no more positronic matrices, since that is the key component in making up an android's brain.
Yeah, and I was thinking about it. The positronic, maybe running some of his blood or some of his – running his cells through a positronic brain, there's probably something within that brain that is able to detect and eliminate that silicone virus, something that, you know, that is obviously more capable than the antibodies or the white cells that our body produced to fight infections and viruses. So that was what I took away from it, that there's probably something synthetic, obviously, because a positronic brain isn't a real brain. There's something synthetic. It's like fighting synthetic with synthetic, you know, fire with fire.
Yeah, that would make sense.
So that's how I took it. And I mean, that made sense to me. I mean, and, you know, the writers did, I know I've done some bashing on them, but they did a lovely job of Troy explaining that and kind of leaving it a little open for interpretation, but there was plenty of explanation there of why he wasn't able to recover from this rare illness.
Right, which also, they also explained why Picard did not go to Riker and Troy from the beginning, because of the tragedy that happened with their son, how he passed away. They wanted to just stay in seclusion and not risk their daughter, their yep. only child that they have left. So that's why he did not involve them in this, because they knew, or he knew, that they would help him, and he did not want them, or to put them in that position to where they might have to lose another child.
Yeah. Yeah, and I found it funny. I was watching this probably, I think I've seen this episode twice. It was funny because I was watching this episode and I was thinking Riker was a huge horn dog in TNG. I'm pretty sure they could have pumped out more than two kids, you know, with, you know, he bangs anything with a vagina. He could have, I think, you know, he could have probably had a gaggle of children. Shoot, he probably does have a gaggle of children with all the space poutang he was getting.
I know. I actually wrote that in my notes. I wrote, forgot when Riker wasn't banging every chick he saw, he was actually a pretty smart dude.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, he settles down, gets married, and all he can pump out is two kids. That's it. I know they were pushing that, you know, that age when Troy would go through menopause, but then again, she's not human. Maybe she has a longer fertility cycle than most humans.
If you remember in The Next Generation, when Beta Z women go through menopause, this is one of the Loxana episodes that you probably skipped. They go super horny. Beta Z women go super horny when they go in menopause. So yeah, they should have pumped out a gaggle of kids when she was going through menopause. That should have been Will's like funnest time to be alive. Like going right as you're going through middle age, she's going through this kind of menopause, and she just wants to bang 24/7. Like.
Yeah, but you know, in that Troy's mother went through menopause, what seemed like a relatively late age. It felt like she was late 50s, early 60s, where human females get them in their mid 40s, maybe late 40s. Yeah, we'll say mid to late 40s. So with Troy being half human, she could get it anywhere between mid 40s to early to mid 60s.
I don't know the biology that well to know, you know, exactly. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah. So he could have had like a gaggle of children, little Rikers running around. He could have fucking filled an entire starship for all I know.
Yeah. Everybody thinks when it comes to Star Trek that Kirk was the, you know, banging every woman left and right. But no, that was Riker. Like literally almost every episode he was banging a new chick.
If there was a guest star that was attractive and had a vagina, Riker stuck his dick in it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I got to say. And we'll move on from there because
we could keep going.
We could talk about this for quite a while. And yeah. We try to keep, I mean, it's our podcast. We can do whatever the fuck we want time-wise, but we try to keep it at a consistent time.
Right.
Yeah. So, okay. Enough Ace storyline. We'll come back to it. We kind of jumped. We kind of told most of the episode for the A storyline. So let's cut back to the B and C storylines, where you see Hugh and Elnor meet back up, which they're both pissed. Obviously, Hugh's going to be pissed because he just saw, you know, his friends, his XBs murdered right in front of him by Rizzo, and Elnor's like, I'm not having this shit. Let's go cut some people.
Yeah, right. And then he does. He goes full ninja on a couple of Romulans.
Well, Elnor, you know, yeah, like you said, he went full ninja on people. This was right after you find out that kind of that Rizzo has been, she's been following Hugh. She wants to know what's going on. She knows there's a mother room or whatever it's called somewhere.
The Queen's Chamber, yeah. The Queen's, I don't know what it's called either, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, she knows it's somewhere. She knows there's some way he helped Picard escape the cube or hiding him somewhere. So she pops up, and then a fight ensues. And the fight ends with that bitch freaking ninjaing a blade into Hugh's neck. I was pissed. I'm a casual Star Trek fan, but I've seen the Hugh episodes in TNG. And, you know, I like the actor. I like the character. And that bitch can eat a dick and choke on it for killing Hugh.
Yeah, I mean, this wasn't the first time that they killed off a notable character from the previous shows. You know, they did it with Icheb a couple episodes ago, who was kind of like Hugh in that he was in several episodes. You know, he was a notable character, and he was actually pretty popular amongst Star Trek fans. So, I mean, they're not taking any chances when it comes to killing off these characters and moving that storyline that way.
Yeah, well, you know, I didn't watch Voyager, so Icheb didn't stick out to me, but Hugh did, since I did watch TNG. And I know he was only in a handful of episodes, if that. But still, that bitch!
Three. Yeah.
Fucking bitch! That's all I gotta say is bitch!
I know, right? It was interesting timing, though, for her, though. Like, as Icheb ran to go help Hugh, he grabs the knife, pulls it out of his neck, and throws it at the bitch. And just so happens the transport, like, that was the fastest fucking transport out that I've ever seen in my life.
I know.
You know what I mean?
And, you know, another thing is, first aid 101 is leave any blade inside the body. That way you don't pull it out and cause more damage and cause the blood to escape. I mean, I know she cut his jugular, but still, there's always hope if you could leave the tool in the body. First aid 101.
True. I think he was more concerned with trying to kill the bitch. Because he would have if that transporter didn't come out.
Yeah.
Like, she was not ready for it, and she would have died.
Yeah.
Like,
but Hugh gives some more information. He makes a subtle joke, too, while he's dying. He's like, how do you consider this is lost cause? Or whatever.
How is this for a lost cause? I was that much of a hopeful again for a minute. Thanks.
I'm still mad. I'm a little heated because he died. And then he tells Elnor, he goes, you got to get an XP and you got to get to the queen cell and you got to destroy the cube.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he didn't say that all,
man.
He didn't say that all while he was dying. Elnor and Hugh before the fight were talking about how they need to get to the queen cell. They need to, you know, they need
to take control of the Borg cube. They were going to insurrection the ship.
Yeah, they needed to blow the airlock and just suck all the Romulans out.
Why'd you have to say it like that?
I said suck them out, not suck them off.
Well, no, that's not what I meant.
Oh.
you never mind.
Whatever. Moving on. But yeah, so you get that. So now you know Elnor's mission is to get to the queen cell. Finally popped in my head.
He actually calls for help once he gets to the queen cell. He calls 7 of 9 to come to his rescue. If you remember, she gave Picard that coin. I don't know exactly what it was. It kind of looked like a coin or a chip or something to signal her if he ever needed help. And somehow Elnor had it and called 7 of 9 for help. And that's kind of, I think that's where we left Elnor when it came to the Borg cube.
Yeah.
I think that was pretty much it. So let's finish. I guess we should try and finish up the.
Let's jump into the B storyline, which is the Rios and what the events taking place on his ship. And, you know, they're trying to shake the tail that they have of Narek following them, and nothing they are trying is working. And then Girardi just starts losing her shit. She's like, let's just go home. Let's go to Earth. Set a course for Earth. Let's get the fuck out of here. And she's just like losing her shit. And then Rafi's like, yeah, calm down, honey. Let's go get you some Rafi. I don't know how she described it, but, you know, let's fix this the Rafi way.
What I want to know is, when did Rafi start giving a shit about other people?
I don't know. I think, you know, Rafi from 2 or 3 episodes ago would have been like, get the fuck off the bridge. Go somewhere else with that bullcrap attitude.
Right. She was drinking her own problems away later. Now she cares enough to care what everybody else thinks.
Maybe sober Rafi is more of a caring person, because I don't think she was on the bottle this episode. So maybe she's a more caring and compassionate person to, I mean, her solution is whatever Girardi wants, and it ends up her, you know, Girardi eating pounds and fucking cake.
Red velvet cake, yeah.
Yeah.
She peeks it up. What's with her fat? What's with the, why do they keep making, like, her throw up or, like, shit coming out of her mouth. Like, she pukes a lot in this episode.
She pukes once.
She puked in the beginning of the episode in the flashback. She pukes with the red velvet. She puked again. Actually, in that last one, that's kind of jumping ahead a little bit. But she pukes a couple of times in this episode.
Well, yeah, she pukes twice.
Flashback.
Yeah, in the flashback and then here with the red velvet cake.
What I found interesting was Rios was starting to suspect Rafi of maybe betraying them because they were not able to shake the tail. They managed to stop the ship because they figured out that they were being tailed. And the hope was that he would just fly right by them, not knowing that they had stopped. And they would set a different course and get to the planet that way. But they figured out, hey, I am still following you. And they're trying to figure out, well, how the fuck is this guy still following me unless Rafi betrayed us? So what I'm saying is, why is it that Rios is trusting Rafi, or not trusting Rafi, but is trusting Dr. Girardi in telling her this information when Girardi is the one that actually betrayed them and he has known Rafi for a long time? Like, he's known Rafi before, and yet he suspects her over Dr. Girardi, who he hasn't really known that long, and banged her once.
Yeah, and
like, was the pussy that good?
Could have been. Rios explains that, you know, obviously Girardi hasn't left the ship. And Rafi did leave the ship when they were on Star Cloud, or at Star Cloud City. And he thinks that she either met up with a Romulan, or maybe a Romulan was following her and managed to place a tracker on her. And that was his reasoning, is because Rafi has been off the ship while Girardi has been on the ship ever since they left Earth. So he wasn't thinking, well, maybe she's been being tracked this whole time. Maybe because
that would make sense. She started freaking out halfway. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but she started freaking out like halfway through her journey after, or when she killed Maddox.
Ever since she's been on the ship, she has not seemed entirely stable. There's always, you know, her anxiety is out the ass. And yeah, she hasn't seemed like herself since, for pretty much the whole season, because of the events that took place in the first episode and what she knows. And she had to kill Maddox. And now, since it explained at the start of the episode that she's being tracked, and now, you know, Rios is starting to suspect Rafi when, you know, she's clearly the one being traced, which ends with her having a complete breakdown. Girardi ends up synthesizing this medicine or this chemical that ends up, it causes her to seize, and the computer warned her that in some species that this can have neurological toxin effects.
Right.
So it causes Girardi to go into a seizure, which is what you alluded to earlier when you were saying she threw up, but she just had that foaming sensation of the mouth that I think some people get with seizures, but I more apply it to people with rabies.
It was supposed to just be like a neurotoxin, and that was just like a side effect, and they were just trying to do it for exaggeration. I don't know if she was necessarily having a seizure.
I don't know. I took it as a seizure. She was on her side. She was shaking profusely. So that's how I took it, that one of the side effects was a seizure. So,
well, why would she pick something that would give her like a seizure? Why wouldn't she pick something that would be quick and painless if she was trying to kill herself?
We really don't know what's going on in her mind. Is she trying to kill herself? Because we find out it ends up putting her in a coma. But this chemical, which, you know, I can't name right now because my notes say uranium, but it's not uranium. I think maybe she had to know what she was doing, that it was going to put her in the coma. It was going to, they
maybe
had to
destroy the tracker.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what it did, because we find out after she takes it and after she slips into the coma, Narek can no longer track her. She loses that, or he loses that signal. So, you know, it either destroyed it or subdued it or whatever. It eliminated the tracking capability that they had. So maybe that was one of the only chemicals or synthetic cocktails that she could throw together that would neutralize the tracker without killing her, even though the side effects were potentially harmful. But I think she suspected the emergency medical system or whatever it was to appear and kind of take care of her.
Place a lot of faith in something that nobody else likes to use.
Yeah, but let's jump back to the A storyline. Let's wrap this up with the A storyline. Because I don't think there's anything in B and C that are worth.
No, I think we covered pretty much B and C.
Yeah, because I'm still still rabid about the bitch killing Picard or Hugh.
Yeah.
But yeah, so to finish off a storyline, Will makes pizza for everyone.
I must say, as the son of a father who owned a pizza restaurant, there is no way in hell that that pizza was going to satisfy six people.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about personal pizzas that are the size, they're like 6-inch personal pizzas, and, you know, I probably ate the equivalent to 5 of those today.
Yeah.
Not even 2 hours ago. So.
Badass.
So.
There's no way in hell that, I don't know what the hell else they were planning on eating, like, but there is no way that that pizza was going to satisfy them.
Yeah, but then again, you know, they didn't expect 2 additional mouths to feed. They just expected the 3. So, you know, maybe he had to make do with what he had, you know, given that they dropped in on him without notice.
Yeah. This is when Soju found out that she is finally an android. Or this is when she finally finds out that she's an android.
She kind of has suspected in the conversation that her and the Riker child, Kestra, is having. You know, Soji kind of explains is she was having a hard time believing she was an android until Kestra called her one while they were hiking back to the cabin.
Right, when she was trying to explain who her father was and by bringing up Data.
I'll give kudos to the writers. They did, through Kestra and Soji's conversations, they were able to explain Data and kind of give you an understanding of who Data was. For those fans who had not seen the series or were not as familiar with TNG as you and I are.
Right.
Kestra did a good job explaining that Data wanted to be as human as androidly possible.
Androidly yeah. possible?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can't be as human as humanly possible with being an android, so he's as human as androidly possible.
Yep.
Yeah, I like it. I'm going to go with that.
All right, go with that.
But yeah, so, you know, I think the writers have done a good job of explaining the connection between Picard, Riker, and Deanna, and explaining who Data was, and giving, you know, non-hardcore or even, you know, people who are tuning into Picard, and this is their first exposure to Star Trek, kind of giving them an idea of who Data was.
Right. Well, here's my question. I just kind of remembered this, and I wanted to bring this up. Kestra's blonde. Where did that blonde come from?
You obviously did not pay attention in biology.
Well, I know that there's recessive genes, but neither one of them have blonde genes. Blonde is the recessive of the genes.
Well, we don't know that they don't have blonde at all in their DNA. So it might have been they have 2 recessive blonde genes, and then, you know, when Kestra was conceived, she ended up getting those 2 blonde genes and ended up being blonde.
I don't know. I know that Loxana wasn't blonde. I know that the dad wasn't blonde when they showed him in the episode, and Riker's dad wasn't blonde. So maybe Deanna had a little affair, you know? You never know. She did get pretty horny when she went through that menopause. No. She could have. Not saying that she did, yeah, but she could have.
Going through menopause means you no longer have the ability to bear a child.
Well, it's a Bajoran form of menopause, so
and for, which how, she gets super Bajoran fucking from and, she's Betazoid.
Bajoran. Oh, sorry, Betazoid. I get Bajoran because they explain this in Deep Space Nine on Bajor. Because in Deep Space Nine, Loxana gets pregnant and has another kid. Bet you didn't see that one coming.
Well, okay. That trumps my argument. No, because I haven't gotten that far in Deep Space Nine. All right. Okay. Well, obviously, menopause is a hell of a lot different
Betazoids.
For Betazoid women than it is human women. But all right. Well, still, biology, you know, one of their grandparents could have been blonde. It's just something that could probably skip generations. I mean, it's not impossible. Improbable, yeah, but, you know, it's not unbelievable.
That, or it's just something that they didn't think about when doing the casting.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. Who's going to pick out that the girl's blonde while the other two are brunettes? You, of all people.
Any serious Star Trek fan. Like, that's why the MCU has done so well. They stay true to the comics, and they stay consistent.
All so I'm saying is it's genetically possible for something like that to happen. Case
yes,
closed.
You're right.
So let's get back to their dinner table conversations, because that's when, as Troy referred to it earlier in the episode, to kind of use it as a ready room. So that they start bouncing off ideas. Soji, Picard explains to Soji that he was not in a great place before this mission started, and kind of opens himself up so that Soji would be willing to open herself up, just not to Narek again.
Right.
But
again.
But to open herself up and explain what happened when Narek and the Romulans got the information of her homeworld. So they start bouncing ideas off each other, that Maddox went to this planet that is unknown and continued his work and obviously created these, nothing that we don't already know for the most part. Until Soji says it's a planet with two red moons and consistent lightning storms.
Oh, that was one of my favorite scenes with Kestra, how they're all trying to figure out, like, okay, but now we gotta figure out where this planet is, and she's just like on her, apparently there's still cell phones in the 25th century, and she's just like on her phone like, hey Captain, do you know this planet? They're like, yeah, here it is. And while they're figuring out, it's like, okay boomer, found it.
Yeah, for real. And it's funny too, because the episode kind of, it doesn't go into detail about the person she's texting, just that it's another old Starfleet captain that's been around longer than Picard.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, she's sitting there texting under the table. She's like, I got it, motherfuckers. Let's move on. You old ass white people, you slow motherfuckers.
I know, right?
But yeah, and you find out this planet is in the Vought sector in the Hulian system. And ironically, the planet doesn't have a name, it just has a number. But
well, something that we really didn't talk about, Thad was like a super genius when it came to languages, and he invented like 11 to 12 languages. And I think they had, what was the name of the word? It was like Adin, I think they had it for the name of home for one of the languages. And it was supposed to be like a symbolic moment when this is Soji's, Adin.
Yeah, because, Soji's kind of lost this whole episode. She doesn't know if what she's experiencing is even real. I mean, for her, this might be something that's all drawn up in a computer and playing out on a holodeck, for all she knows.
Mm-hmm.
She's not convinced that anything's real. She's not convinced she can even trust anyone, even the little girl.
Yeah. So, I mean, she's going through a really difficult time.
Yeah, and earlier in the episode, Troy calls out Picard because Picard kind of becomes a dickhead and becomes super sarcastic and is like, well, maybe you shouldn't trust anyone.
Yeah, well, it's nice to know that Picard will still be an asshole when he's an old man.
Yeah, then, I like that Troy put him in his place. He was like, you have no idea what the fuck is going on with this girl or what she has even been through.
Yeah.
And in a way, without saying it, it's like, keep your fucking mouth shut.
I think Riker's kind of been the comedic relief in this episode. Like, he's like, well, all you had to say was dinner's ready.
Yeah, and then he burns dinner. I mean, no one wants to eat that shit.
No, remember, it was a cancel red alert. It was just a burnt tomato.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, well, he's the greatest starship captain of all time. And it was like, who said that? He's like, you did.
Yeah.
Oh, I must have been drinking.
Yeah, and it was funny. And it... He is the comedic relief in this episode, and I really didn't think of it until you brought it up.
He did a good job of it, too.
He did, and I was going to say, he's generally more serious in TNG, but he has his serious episodes, and he has his comedic relief episodes where, he can kind of do both.
Yeah. In the earlier seasons, especially in the first season, he was very serious. And then when the beard came in, he kind of mellowed out a bit.
Yeah.
So
yeah, probably started smoking that ganja.
Probably. Maybe it was just the beard. Who knows, maybe I'll have a similar luck. I'm trying to grow out a beard. It's not going very well, but I'm trying.
Mine didn't go very well either, so I just grew out a mustache and a goatee. But anyways, this episode ends with Picard, everyone on Nepethine, the Rikers, the Picard and Soji, kind of saying goodbye, and Picard beams off onto the ship and they're on to continue their mission. Yeah, so nothing too great, nothing too, it's not like the last episode where it ended on Elnor being a badass and being like, please, my friends, choose to live.
Yeah, I know, right? That was awesome.
At the end of last episode, you knew some crazy shit went down. He sliced and diced some people like they were freaking pepperoni pizzas.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go into final thoughts on the episode. Chris, what did you think? Did you like the episode?
I did, actually. I thought the acting was very good. I was very impressed with the acting. I was impressed from the acting from Riker. I was impressed from the acting from Elnor, from Soji, the cunty bitch who... Oh, I'm sorry, just a bitch, I guess. It's who killed Hugh.
Fucking bitch!
You know, I know, right? All of it was very great acting, and it was very good storyline. I liked how they developed the storyline of the kids. They give it a very in-depth storyline of Thad and what happened with Thad and why Thad isn't around, why they didn't get him involved, and how that connects with the synth band. They were able to tie it into the Sith band. So I just thought that overall it was a very well written, very well directed, and very well acted episode. I think this has probably been the best episode of the series so far, in my opinion.
I agree with you. I think it was a good episode. I enjoyed it. It was great to see Will, Deanna, and Picard all on screen again. And it brought back that nostalgic feeling from the TNG days. You know, especially when they were sitting around the dinner table and kind of bouncing ideas off each other about what was going on. And I liked the C and the B storyline. I didn't like that Hugh died, but I can't change that now. But I think overall it was a good episode that it was kind of a filler episode, but it wasn't a filler episode in a bad way. You did get some information. You did find out more about Girardi and what the hell she knows. You kind of get to know Will and Deanna and what happened in their lives after Nemesis.
It almost seems like what they were doing was they were trying to develop the B and C storylines to where, and then have the A storyline as more of like a feel-good throwback. Hey, we got, you know, Riker and Troy back, and you kind of get this feel of the reunion while we develop these other two storylines.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. A was the nostalgic storyline, and B and C were kind of pushing the story forward a little bit. There was one last thing I wanted to bring up before we wrap this episode. Well, actually, there's two last things. So there's two last things that I wanted to bring up. One, it was more than glossed over. We totally skipped over this. But Riker's cabin has some badass safety systems in it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he goes to the house. He pretty much goes to Alexa and is like, Alexa, shields up. Alexa, run scanners. Alexa, you should also run the scanners for anti-cloaking. I was like, that's badass. We need that shit to exist now.
Shit, could you imagine yelling to Alexa, Alexa, activate perimeter defenses or home defenses, and then it just pulls out a whole bunch of, like, guns, starts shooting at the doors, protecting
them. No, not the minigun. Just the shields. We just need the shields. Deactivate insta-kill. The second thing I wanted to bring up was CBS All Access needs to get their fucking shit together. Because all throughout watching this episode, the commercials kept cutting in about 15 seconds before the scene was over. So CBS All Access, if you're listening, do better on having your commercials play when the commercials are supposed to fucking play. Because this is like the fourth or fifth time that I've, in the middle of an important scene, cuts the commercial, and you get the last 10 seconds of the scene. It's like, come on.
Jedi Master Steve, anger is the path to the dark side. Okay.
All right, well, Jedi Master Steve is going to be freaking Darth Steve in a fucking couple episodes of CBS All Access keeps doing this shit.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I didn't notice it that bad. But maybe yours was worse than mine, but I didn't really notice it this time. But yeah, that has been a problem, so.
Yeah.
Shall we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it,
kill it.
Punch it.
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it, hot snake!
Punch it, let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
So, Steve, what do we have in store for next week?
So, next time, we're going to be covering Episode 8 of Star Trek Picard, entitled Broken Pieces. And the synopsis reads, when devastating truths behind the Mars attacks are revealed, Picard realizes just how far many will go to preserve the secret stretching back generations. All while the La Serena? La Serena? Oh, that's the name of the ship? Okay, you think I would know that by now. The Lost Arena crew grapples with the secrets and revelations of their own. Nerissa directs her guards to capture Elnor, setting off an unexpected chain of events on the Borg cube. And FYI, Nerissa, who is what Chris has been calling her, is the same person as Rizzo, which is who I call her.
Yeah, the names were weird. Like, sometimes they'll call her Nerissa, like, especially when you're doing the closed captioning. So when you have closed captioning on, they'll have her labeled as Nerissa, which is her first name, and then her last name is Rizzo. So in case there's any confusion, now that's cleared up, I hope.
I hope. Yeah, it's Nerissa Rizzo. Same person.
Which is a weird name, Nerissa Rizzo.
Yeah. Oh, it's kind of, I don't know. I like it. It's all right. Well, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Deep Space High. Please join us next time as we continue to discuss Star Trek Picard.
And don't forget to keep the conversation going on Twitter with hashtag Tacos and Trek and hashtag Deep Space High.
And let us know how we're doing by reviewing Deep Space High, either on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your podcast. And if you like what you're hearing, please subscribe and share the show. I'm Jedi Master Churning Darth Steven.
And I am Sky Marshal Chris. And until next time, live long and prosper.